Today's program has been brought to you by Cider Week New York City, happening November 6th through 15th, 2015. For more information, check out ciderweeknyc.com.
I'm Linda Palaccio, host of A Taste of the Past. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Good evening and welcome to
Fun Men About It
on HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
I'm Mary Izette.
And I'm Chris Guzmi.
And we're your weekly host through this weekly journey of all things fermented.
Archived on Stitcher, iTunes, and right here on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. Apologies to those trying to listen live. Our website is having some difficulty, but that will be remedied shortly. And this week, at the end of this week, what's happening?
Well, very exciting. New York City Cider Week begins this Friday, November 6th, and continues through the 15th. There are a ton of events. It's going to be very hard
not to make it.
Yes, you can't make it to all of them, let me warn you. A couple of cool ones that Chris and I will be at. I know we're going to do Sunday is Cider Days on the Lower East Side on Orchard Street. So they're going to do some pressing, those kind of things. Bitter and Esters is also having a press. If you go to their site, bitterandesters.com, there might still be spaces available. It's all taken. All right, but you should come out to Bitter and Esters one of those evenings. I have to look at the date. I didn't write that one down.
I believe it's November 10th and November 11th.
Yeah, and that's pretty amazing because Joy and Jeremy of Proper Cider bring their press and their hydraulic grinder giant thing. Anyway, it was a great time last year. So if you could stop in, that's a cool thing to witness and be a part of. And then we're also going to do that dinner at Trestle on 10th. I think that's Friday night with Steve Woods.
Mm-hmm.
Next Monday, we will be celebrating Cider Week by having Steve Woods and Louisa from Farnham Hill Ciders and Poverty
Lane Orchards.
Yes. In the studio at 7 p.m. And then we're going to be pre-taping some episodes as well. The following Monday, we'll also have another cider show. And then we're going to have there will be various cider interviews and breakout pieces on the website throughout the week.
So get ready for a bunch of apple and cidery content coming forth. If you are not in New York City or you are in New England, this weekend also is Franklin County Cider Days. We talked about it last year, but because of New York City Beer Week or New York City Cider Week, we're not going to make it up this year. But it is a great and awesome festival, great to go to if you're around. And it is. You can go to ciderdays.org to find out information of that. And for Cider Week, for all the events, it's all on ciderweeknyc.com/events. And that's really all the announcements we have for right now. But I want to say that Thanksgiving is coming up, and we're really excited to do a throwback to last week's episode where we talked with Jennifer Anderson of the White Mustache, who makes great yogurts and also probiotic drinks and out of the way. And she suggested brining your turkeys or your fowl in whey and the probiotics that she has in pretty awesome.
And if you go to their website, thewhitemustache.com, they have a recipe for the juiciest ever whey brined roast turkey recipe. And I know they're going to be selling kits here in New York City. So if you're in New York City, I would recommend picking up a kit. I know she said they're going to be at Whole Foods and a couple of other places. That's in the interview from last week. But if you're not and you can get hold of some whey, you should definitely try this.
No way.
Oh, big shout out. Big shout out to Andy Marcelli,
Rachel goes again,
who organized a fantastic Halloween beer event on Saturday.
Yeah.
At La Birreria at Eataly. So Chris and I poured Cousette libations as well as sampled four different brews from Speed Brewing, I think. Mm-hmm. Raspberry Sema, Strawberry Sema. Very well received. It was just a great time, great beer. They did a similar event on Valentine's Day, so that's something that I would recommend not missing next time they do that. We'll let you know. And then we actually went to Brooklyn Brewery for Halloween night. That was a ton of fun, too. We got a haunted brewery tour.
Haunted brewery tour. It was pretty amazing, actually.
Yes, it was amazing.
You totally should have been there. Mm-hmm. Anyway.
They also have it. If you're in New York City or you're coming to visit, Brooklyn Brewery has their newest beer from the Worshipful Company of Brewers series. And it's a tart Kentucky Common by one of their guys, Eric, and it's delicious.
What's a Kentucky Common?
Well, that's up for some debate, which we're not going to tackle today.
Why not?
Because I have to go to the sources. I had a big discussion about this with Stan Hieronymus when we were at GABF, so I can't touch that. But let's just say that I'm open to non-tart or tart Kentucky Commons, all variations, and so, I think this one's
so
a good
PC
one.
Of you. Okay. Well, today we're talking about meat. Fermented meats, cured meats, everything meat. And today to talk about that is our friend John Ratliff from Ends Meat New York City. How you doing, John?
I'm good, guys.
Thank you very much for coming out. I'm very excited. I've been really, really, really looking forward to having you because this is a topic that I've wanted to cover on the show for a long time. Mm-hmm. I'm a big fan of cured fermented meats, and you know a little bit something about that and are making some amazing things. But who are you?
Who am I? I'm a dude. I'm a dude that butchers pigs and makes... we're doing about 18 different products right now.
Ends Meat is...
Yeah, Ends Meat, and it's kind of it was a long road getting here, but kind of started doing a lot of this out of curiosity.
Let's talk about the road. So it started with a strong curiosity for fermented meats, or were you?
Well, I was in kitchens.
Okay,
so I started working actually in a brewery when I was 15, and had the worst excuse for working there. Well, not the... A common excuse for working there, but...
What's that?
I really just wanted to throw the best parties.
That's fair.
But I put on a front that I wanted to be a chef at 15. Mm-hmm. Like, I didn't know, you know? I wanted to be a cool guy, and... It was a really great brewery in Farmington, New Mexico, and started working in the kitchen, and there were some guys that had been to culinary school, showed me some things, and I actually got really interested in cooking. I left there when I was 18, went to culinary school in Portland, Oregon, and was out there for a couple of years working in restaurants. Got a chance to go to Chicago and work at a pretty fun kind of experimental restaurant. And then I kind of got out of fun experimental restaurants and kind of got back to cooking and was in Chicago for 3 years, moved to New York, was working at a really fantastic Italian restaurant under some amazing chefs and started getting exposed to this world of, you know, old world deli meats, if you will. This like different approach to taking a piece of protein or a cut that I had always used, but never realized I could, you know, salt it and ferment it and age it and make something that, you know, I'd really never tasted before.
Yeah.
So I started doing that. I mean, I was working pretty long weeks at this restaurant and probably can't tell anybody this, but I was totally just making it in the basement when I finished. Nice. And it was really funny because it was not at all like I had no idea what I was doing. And all of the failures at that point in time, I still remember. I mean, there were times where I wouldn't even inoculate sausage batches and wouldn't know why it wasn't curing properly or drying and take it home. I mean, I'd throw it in my backpack, ride my bike home to, I was living in Williamsburg at the time, and hang it in my fridge and see what would happen. And kind of upscaled from there, moved to a bigger apartment. At one point, I just had 5 fridges lining the wall. And it was kind of silly. I mean, the restaurant industry is pretty small. You kind of end up knowing everybody. And friends were just like, hey, I want to carry this in my restaurant. And I was like, okay, you know, you can't talk about it, right? And so, yeah, one thing led to another. And I kind of had a... I was saving up a little money on the road to getting to that point, and I I kind of made a decision whether or not I was going to ride my bike to Argentina or spend some money on a company, on a passion that I wasn't sure if it would go anywhere. But I took the risk, and I kind of fashioned a loft in Greenpoint, an artist loft, into a butcher shop curing facility. Facility is a bad word for it.
Shop.
No, I mean, it was a 1,400 square foot space. It was just raw wood floors, brick walls, wood beams on the ceiling. And I built a wall down the middle of it and split the room with a guy that was upholstering couches.
Wow.
So, I mean, these are all things I can talk about now.
Right. At the time.
At the time, that it was all happening behind closed doors. And I just kept going and kept going and kept going. I built an amazing relationship with a pig farmer, and he was doing amazing Heritage Berkshire pigs on pasture, and he was a family man, and like he wanted to work with me. He kind of, you know, kept supplying me with the product needed, and was very understanding when I was very late in paying, you know. And so I did that for almost a little over 3 years. And through one of my contacts, got put in touch with you know, a management company that was doing a development out in Sunset Park. And about last March, I started working on the lease for it. Signed the lease in November, built out the space, moved in March, and started making products. Yeah. And we didn't start cutting down anything and really distributing it until a month ago.
That's awesome. Congratulations on that.
Thank you. And it was that's the quick version.
The quick version of the road to now. Well, going back a little bit, how did you mentioned failures. How did you recognize it? What do you consider a failure in those trial periods? Like, how do you know?
Well,
that
it's just so interesting. It's like the unknowns of the fermentation process that you know, I still feel like are baffling. I still don't understand them 100%. But I mean, this was back before I knew anything about pH meters or active water content, and I would just, you know, leave something in the fridge until it didn't dry, and then crack into it. And the thing is, if there's enough salt, it's not really gonna go rancid. It's not gonna really turn, but it's not gonna be sliceable. And there's just so many variables that go into the whole step that, whereas the fermentation of it, proper fermentation and proper denaturing of proteins is so important. If all the steps prior to that aren't taken properly and executed well, then the fermentation is the fermentation could be great, but the product could still not be right.
Right.
It could still not be sliceable, or it could be greasy, or it could have problems with the casing, or
right. Just like in brewing, you know, you could have the right yeast and or bacteria and all the right conditions, but if something goes wrong, if you get a little contamination or you do it at the right temperature, still a drinkable beverage, but right. It's not what you're looking for.
Yeah, absolutely. And I feel, I mean, like literally just trash bags full of stuff. Those were bad days.
Before we take a break, let's just talk about the basics of curing meat. Mm-hmm. So most of us are familiar with these, when we think about a meat that we don't have to cook, that's already ready, most of the time they're highly processed. Their preservatives are added, or, you know, some of these mass produced cured meats.
Mm-hmm.
But this is an old world process. So you're using some type of curing or fermentation process to preserve the meat rather than cook it by heat as we know it.
Right.
Or
right.
By chemicals.
And the interesting thing about it is, like, I don't even understand commercial production. I don't even know what they do. I don't think
any of us do.
Yeah.
We're not supposed to know.
For me, this is like the most basic, simple way that you can do it.
And it's how people have preserved meat for thousands of years.
Yeah.
So.
And I mean, it's so hard to talk about the beginning steps to getting there, because quality of animal, age of animal, the type of feed of the animal, the breed of the animal, how it's processed, the amount of stress, as well as how fresh the animal is butchered and turned into product after it's processed, the hanging time.
Right.
All critical elements. Something not a lot of people talk about with this stuff is just straight up fat texture. The difference between polyunsaturated fats and monounsaturated fats, and how pigs metabolize fatty carbohydrates completely different than humans do. They turn it into protein. They turn it into energy. They turn leaner feeds, more fibrous feeds, into fat. So, I mean, you can raise a pig on pasture and feed it grain, or not grains, but different types of barleys and oats or nuts. And you're going to get a fattier pig than if you just feed it corn and soy. And corn and soy are so full of fat and energy, you wouldn't think that would be the way.
Right.
So in my opinion, it took me a long time to figure out fat quality was one of the more important things pre-fermentation to pay attention to. And that is a reason why older world products are the quality that they are. The animals are eating a different, they have a different diet than animals in the States, where, you know, the majority of what we grow is corn and soy, so that's the economical energy source for animals.
Yeah.
And you work with a small farmer, you said, in New Jersey.
Yeah, I work pretty much exclusive with Roaming Acres in New Jersey. And he does a good job of keeping his pigs on pasture. The feed varies from time to time. Talking about yogurt and whey, he often supplements with whey.
Really?
Which is an interesting thing.
Well, we talked a little bit about
that. It's pretty much all water. And the small amounts of protein in it are just amazing in pigs. Just, like, amazing. And it creates a very high-quality, flavorful fat. It really does. There's also a little spent grain in the diet from some
local breweries. Yeah.
So... It's interesting. It's hard to get away from corn and soy completely, but he's doing his best. He understands the quality difference in the two feeds.
Mm-hmm.
There's fat quality, and then age of the animal is another big difference between New World product, like my wine reference, New World.
Yeah,
right. These pigs are fruitier. but the protein structure of older animals, more developed animals, animals that have been walking around for a longer period of time or allowed to walk around at all, they're going to make a better quality fermented dried product because their protein strands are stronger. And all of the flavors that go into that are in line, and they're just going to make. I mean, pigs in Italy are raised to be a lot larger than pigs are here. Pigs in Spain are raised to be a lot larger, and the quality of the product will reflect that. And it's something he wasn't doing at first, and I talked him into it. Now. I mean, he's getting pigs between 350 and 380 pounds, which is dramatically heavier and older than the industry standard.
How old is that generally?
They're between 8 and 10 months.
Mm-hmm.
Industry standard, I feel like, is between 6 and 10.
Mm-hmm.
Or 6 and 7, I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. And I mean, it's just crazy to see how fast these animals can grow.
I can imagine.
I mean, just across the board, whether it's chicken, beef, you know, pork, lamb, turkeys. Turkeys? Talk about turkeys, like 12 weeks? Like, what?
Yeah. It's so crazy. Note, we're going to take a brief break. We'll be right back with more meat.
Ferment about it.
Ferment about it.
Cider Week helps to bring profitability to local orchards while reviving heirloom apple varieties by cultivating awareness of craft cider. Cider Week connects cider makers from New York State and select pioneering guest cideries outside the state to buyers from top restaurants, bars, and retail shops across New York City. Those culinary tastemakers, in turn, help increase consumer awareness of cider's pleasures by hosting public events, tastings, dinners, classes, and pairings that build appreciation and demand for regional ciders.
Welcome back to Ferment About It on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. We're here in the studio with our good friend John Ratliff of Ends Meet NYC. They are based in Industry City, and he's doing amazing whole hog products.
Yeah, whole animal.
Whole animal.
All the way around.
Not just hog, because we actually just tasted me on some beef. Well, tell us about that.
First of all, we have to tell you. So we're sitting in the studio. This studio is in a converted shipping container, so that gives you an idea of the size. There's a giant plate glass window in front of us, and we're looking out at people eating in Roberta's, which is an absolutely fantastic pizza restaurant. But anyway, you brought seven different kinds of your meats, mm-hmm. and we've been snacking a little bit. They're so good.
People are looking at us jealous of our food on this episode. But yeah, these seven products that you have fermented and cured, one of them being beef, and you do whole animal, you from head to toe, mm-hmm. you deal with the animal for the various different things you can do.
Yeah, so many different things out of an animal. It's there's so many really amazing butcher shops doing mainly whole animal, and it's kind of funny. It's like a little bit of a trendy terminology, a term that has really been how butcher shops were operating always, because there wasn't a commercial industry behind it,
right?
You know, and I feel like it got a little lost, and everything just got, you know, packaged, and you could order whatever you wanted whenever you needed it: skirts, steaks, hanger steak, but, you know, pork loins. But the whole animal aspect of it is really important. It's about taking responsibility for that animal, because inevitably large processing facilities, larger operations, they're not going to have time to deal with the skin, the bones, the soft fat, the offals, and they just are a byproduct. They go to render, they just get thrown out altogether. And I think there's a kind of a full circle of this product that starts with a beautiful animal, and hopefully, if I don't mess it up, ends with a beautiful product. And there's a lot of hopefully minimizing the amount of hands touching it in the process. Mm-hmm. And it's a tight niche, but it's interesting. Like beef, for example, beef has a higher pH than pork. Just naturally, it has a higher pH. So pork is a little more acidic naturally. So the fermentation of beef takes a little longer, and it's something that I am not nearly as good at as I am with pork. It doesn't have the same. It just doesn't ferment the same. It doesn't have the same microbial activity going on, and whereas it ferments great and it does its thing, pork is made for it. It's just, I mean, every ounce of it. I mean, the beautiful fat on the pork loin that you can leave on there, and then the really hard fat that you can remove, and then you can put it in with leaner meat for the different salamis. And you can really utilize the whole thing if you think about it and look at it. It's hard to do it all fermented. I haven't figured out a fermented chicharrón yet.
Fair enough. There's maybe a reason for that.
Yeah,
it's, you know.
I'm like, wait. No, I've done that before. I had to throw it away, though. I'm sure. That was.
So let's talk about it. So when you're doing, it's basically a curing process or mm-hmm. a fermentation process. So you're adding, do you add culture or?
Yeah, so
it's kind of similar to cheese making in a lot of ways, or even brewing. I mean, it's in the whole realm of fermentation, similar, totally. Very similar to what we as brewers do. Or,
and I wish all the times I've been around brewers and talked to brewers, like I guess I just didn't have the same aptitude for brewing as I did for this, so I kind of lost track of exactly how how it goes down and like the cultures that are introduced. But here we're trying to develop lactic acid. Obviously, it's the one of the many hurdles that we're introducing to this protein to preserve it. Hurdles we're getting over.
Hurdles we're getting over.
Bacterial hurdles.
Yeah. So a low pH.
Is something
that you're looking for.
You're going well. USDA requires 5.3 and
right.
below shelf stable products, depending whether it's Ag and Markets or USDA, need to be like either 4.9 or 4.6. And when you start getting that low, it just gets dramatically more acidic. And it's my flavor profile. Everything I drink or eat has either acid or bitter. That's my flavor mm-hmm. profile. So I tend to like to go a little more acidic. For general purposes, I toned it down when I was in the shop in Greenpoint. I was regularly getting below 4.6. And now we're staying right around 5.1. But basically what's happening, whether it's a whole mussel or a ground sausage, you're introducing a culture to it. And I want to get all geeky on all the different cultures that there are, but I can't remember all.
No worries.
But it is a lactobacillus starting culture, and there's so many different strands of that, and a lot of them have been commercially produced specifically for certain types of products. And the two biggest components in that is how long do you want to ferment. And what type of sugar are you using? What type of carbohydrate are you using in it? And I wanted to, well, I mean, from the get-go, I wanted to get away from big corn. And I wanted to try to focus on more flavor development. So what I started doing was researching these strands and seeing which ones are better at processing disaccharides, more complex sugars that take longer at a lower temperature. So there's found one, and I used turbinado as a carbohydrate in this, and it does a great job at processing. It takes a little while to get it kick-started. I mean, it's a freeze-dried culture. It's a total commercial culture. Freeze-dried, hydrate it in filtered water, distilled water. The chlorine will annihilate the culture. And wake it up a little bit and then mix it into the mass lightly, very lightly. And then case and go into the fermentation chamber, which we... Optimal temperature and humidity for this strand itself is 75 degrees and 95% humidity.
So your meat has to be that temperature too when you're mixing it up?
No, right? Meat's almost frozen.
Almost
the
frozen.
Meat's cold.
Okay.
The whole mussels are coming out of refrigeration at 38 degrees when they go in casing. And then the salamis, the sausages, I pretty much get them as frosty, as close to frozen as possible before I grind. That ensures fat definition and a clean cut, a nice sliceable product. So they're all of these products are going into the fermentation pretty cold. There's a pretty strong lag phase for the culture to really, everything has to get to 75 degrees. So it probably takes, I want to say it takes 2 to 3 hours before it really hits its optimal temp and humidity. And then from there, we're going between 48 and 60 hours. And it's not as much about the hours as it is whether or not I'm in the shop. No, I'm just kidding. As it is the pH, I mean, we pH test it at 48, and if it's not where we want it to be, we let it go. If it is where we want it to be, we pull it.
And by pulling it, you're sending it to a colder environment.
Well, it's a little tricky right now because ideally we give it a drip phase in the fermentation chamber. I just readjust the environment in the fermentation chamber to be more similar to our drying room. And that way I can get a lot of the surface moisture off of the product and start really good mold formation, start really good, like allow spores to really attach because the casing at that point in time is very tacky. And what's happening is a lot of that lactic acid that is coming out of the pores being extracted, is awesome for certain strands of penicillin. Once again, I'm not going to get all geeked out on that. It's 300 strands.
Fair enough.
But and these feeders, this food for these spores are just like you want it to be able to attach. You want to give it time to attach, and so we allow mold development to happen in the fermentation chamber, but not in fermentation environment.
Okay.
Because the molds are far less picky about the temperature and the humidity for that matter. So we let it hang out in there. We do a weekly production. So for example, pigs will come in on Thursday. All pigs get broken down. On Friday, we make all the products. Either the whole muscles go on cure for 14 days, and all the salami gets ground, cased, fermentation starts. The whole muscles from 14 days prior to that get pulled out off of cure, and they either go in casing or just get tied up and hung. And everybody goes in the fermentation chamber, 48 hours to 60 hours, and then we change the environment, let them drip, let them dry, let the mold attach, until the next round's ready to go in.
Mm-hmm.
At that point in time, we take them out. You're like, how I have like all the hand motions down. I'm so like, I was giving like showing somebody how I butcher a pig the other day with my hand. I was like, you can't do that with a rubber knife. This is Halloween, right. So you can't be too surprised, right? So we roll them into our drying room, and this drying room's it's like 240 square feet. It's not massive, mm-hmm. but it's good size. And it's just same thing, environmentally controlled, and we keep it at 55 degrees with a 75% humidity. And it's really funny because I designed this whole thing kind of cheap. Mm-hmm. I could have got
your
this
startup
equipment from Italy, and and I just wouldn't have been able to open.
Right.
But so the fans, like they don't exactly blanket the room with air evenly. So we have certain spots in the room that have more air movement. And with air movement, you have a lot of moisture removal. Surface moisture is being lifted off the product a lot faster. So when these products come out of fermentation, they go... There's a sweet spot right inside the door that we let them hang out until the next round comes in behind them. By the next week, when the next round comes in behind them, their surface is really dry and the mold is attached and is blooming very, very well. And so then they kind of go and file. Then we just we take all the products off the rack and we put them all in the racks with the other products of that type, with the other chorizos, with the other pancettas. And then they hang there until they're dry, I guess. Let's see.
And when is there an optimal time to eat salami or salumi?
Like holidays are pretty good if you're hardcore between 8 and 9 in the morning.
Well, we were talking before the show, you were like, you know, when sometimes if things don't get out where they want it, you know, it just gets better, right? If it's not moving, it's getting
100%,
better.
100%. But there is the reality that whereas like there is still activity happening in there.
Right.
There's still lactic acid alive and taking apart fats and proteins and developing these cool flavors. But they diminish drastically without the presence of water.
Right.
And you can really only go so much until you're making bonito. Like, you're just gonna have to
saw through it
and shave it on a grinder or something. So I mean, it has a lot to do with fat content. It has a lot to do with the cut, and I kind of your desired effect. I mean, spending time in Italy, it was like they eat their salamis so soft compared to in the States. It's like, which I don't know if I like. I was like,
right.
Soft. I want to be more like, oh, it's so higher true. Moisture content.
Way
right?
higher moisture okay. content, and they're fresher, they're faster, mm-hmm. and that might just be a new thing because I know a lot of old world Italian is just like, dry that shit. Oh, sorry.
No, it's fine.
Right. No,
this is internet radio.
Yeah. Oh, okay,
fuck,
cool.
Shit, poop, whatever you want.
Oh, right. Nice. Yeah, stop it. I can actually speak my mind.
That's probably going to be the quote that Liz uses for the website, but you know.
No, so let's talk about it. So you brought these seven. Tell us again and the audience what you brought, because these are representative of some of the things that you make.
Yeah, totally. So I got these at Costco before I came here today. Let's see. It's funny because I generally, when I do tastings with people, I always like, taste them on fattier, softer, spiced things that aren't super huge, and then go to the heavier stuff. So that's how we're going to do it.
Awesome.
So pancetta, which is the pork belly. Very simple. Leave the skin on, crust it, rosemary, thyme, black peppercorn. That one went for about... Really, all of this stuff is going on like 6-7 months right now.
That's amazing.
That's delicious.
And it's fun pancetta because you can shave it this thin and eat it raw and not feel bad about it.
This is belly, right?
Yeah. So we take the rib section of the belly. Mm-hmm. I was never shown really how to butcher by a butcher. I never like worked at a butcher shop or. I kind of bought a couple pigs and really fucked them up. And watched some YouTube videos.
I love it.
And so there's a couple sections of the belly. There's the rib side, which is the front side towards the shoulder. And then there's the back side, which I call the flank. And it's similar to beef. It has pretty much all the same muscles. Mm-hmm. And so we separate those because they make completely different products. And the flank section, we actually cure like bacon and smoke, and we use that in the shop for sandwiches. It's got a different fat definition to it, and it doesn't dry as hard and slice as well. Plus, it's got like beautiful muscles in it. Like, it's got bavette, flank steaks, skirt steaks, mm-hmm. really beautiful stuff that sometimes will seam out for our meat club and give people like pig bavettes. You know, mm-hmm. like not a lot of people are eating pig bavettes. Mm-hmm. Or pig flank steaks, and these pigs are so big that they're actually substantial.
That's awesome. Meat club.
No words. No words for that.
All right, wait. Okay, go through this, and then we're going to get to talk about meat club and how people can visit you.
Let's see. Blah blah blah. Now I can't even. Okay, so we have the pancetta. Then we're going to go to the Lonza.
Real quick, before we move on from pancetta, the reason I brought up, I wanted to know the cut, is like, so this is pancetta, but everything made from this part, everything cured from this part of the belly is not always pancetta. What are other things made from that cut? Or am I wrong? I'm just curious.
I don't know. Sometimes it'll get cured and it'll go into sausage. But there's definitely, people are making porchettas out of it. Pancetta rollata. I can't say my Italian. But it's like rolled pancetta.
Right.
But pretty much across the board that I'm aware of, the Italian salumis that are produced utilizing the belly are generally some form of pancetta.
That's my question. Thank you very much.
And I think pancetta is just belly, panza.
Okay.
Lonza, pork loin. This one's actually really cool. We leave a little section of meat right at the top of the belly on it. And we also leave the rib cap on it and a decent amount of fat. So we split the hard fat and the soft fat, which is another really important aspect to this whole thing. And this one's cured with juniper, coriander, fennel seed. Cased in natural beef bung. We use some pretty interesting animal intestines. I don't know if I should talk about that online. You might have to bleep that one out.
No. We'll get to that. Okay. You might have to come back for that.
Anyways, So this one goes for cured for 14 days, aged for, you know, six months. Beef braisola. Really heavy debate right now at the shop how the hell to say braisola, but beef eye round, simply cured with Tellicherry black peppercorns, shoved in a casing, aged. That one ages a little less because this is one of those products that will get too dry. Mm-hmm. It will get too dry. This is verging on too dry, but super, super flavorful still.
Very flavorful.
Yep.
Now we're going to Finocchione. This is the larger format one in the next to the pancetta. Fennel pollen, fennel seed. Very straightforward, very clean. And then we have our version of a saucisson sec, which is just straight up a lot of raw garlic and Tellicherry black peppercorn. Then we have our Spanish-style chorizo, cumin, pimentón. Very, very heavy on the cumin and pimentone. And then the guy just hiding over here, that guy, Nduja. So our take on Nduja, the southern Italian spreadable salami that is so cool right now.
It's one of my favorites.
And
it's a happy place.
It's just so funny because like I can't really call it Nduja. We have our scheduled process, which makes us legal to make these products, and we have to label them whatever our scheduled process says. And our scheduled process says Nduja. I make it with all like southwestern style chilies.
Awesome!
No, so excited to try this.
That's my New Mexico roots.
Yeah, man.
New Mexico roots right there. So yeah, these are some of the mini products that we're making. I wanted to bring in for you guys.
So where can people? So you're in Industry City. So we've talked about Industry City before. Our friend Dave, who we've had on,
Dave Craco from Industry City Distilling,
yeah, is also there. There's a ton of different food chocolate places.
Mm-hmm.
And now their smorgasbord has...
Mm-hmm. And Brooklyn Flea.
So if people want to come and visit you and either buy, you know, meats to take home with them or sandwiches, what's the best times?
Ooh, so we're open Monday through Friday from 11 to 7. And I like to think we have a pretty fun lunch program going on. We do a handful of sandwiches, some things We tried to name everything Wu-Tang references, and it hasn't, like, we really only have one right now. It's called a Jump Off. It's like a non-sandwich item.
Side note, Brooklyn Brewery's costume winner on Saturday were some bumblebees with Wu-Tang.
Nice.
Killer bees. They were killer bees.
Sweet.
Yeah, anyway.
Yeah, we got some killer bees. No, we really just have one thing. But then we do different soups and different grain salads and veggie salads and things like that. We get one delivery from a group of farms out in Pennsylvania and New Jersey for our veg, and we just kind of like make that last all week, and we still get a cook, and I have some really great guys working with me out there that come in, and the majority of the days we're not even touching fermented meats. We're you know, making celery root soup or meatballs, you know. And so it's like there's, yeah, it's an interesting shop. It's not a butcher shop. It's a sandwich shop, but it's in a production space. Mm-hmm. So it's pretty raw. Everything's on wheels.
That's great.
It's like people make fun of me for it. It's like, I need everything on wheels.
Yeah.
And then if somebody who can't get out to you during the week because they're working in the Bronx or New Jersey or Manhattan or whatever, what do the weekends look like?
The weekends, well,
because I feel like Industry City at this point is a really good
destination weekend.
It's
a good
totally.
Trip, food trip.
It really is, and that happened like 3 weeks ago.
Yeah.
Like it is very recent, and we don't have a lot of outlets. We don't have a lot of retail outlets. Well, we don't have any retail outlets.
But your
right
hours
now.
During the weekend,
but on
are what?
Yeah, but are you open on the weekends as well?
Oh, I'm sorry. We're open on Saturday.
Okay, awesome.
11 to 7.
Okay.
It's so new, I forgot what you're doing.
And that's the same day that is Brooklyn Flea or Smorgasburg?
Both of them are both days, both Saturday
okay,
and Sunday.
Okay, awesome. Yeah, so definitely worth a visit because...
Yeah, I'd like to think so. On the weekends, we've been getting really, really great people that are actually interested in these products.
Yeah. I mean, this is delicious. Yeah. These are amazing.
Yeah. John, you're doing awesome.
And then
awesome,
quick,
awesome
let's talk
work.
About your meat club before we go.
Yes.
Before we wrap up. What's a meat club?
Oh, what is a meat club? A bunch of dudes with sausages. No, it was modeled after a CSA. So it is a 12-week membership. Sign up, pay in full in advance, and every week you come to one of our three locations, which is Sunset Park at Industry City, 36th and 3rd. And then we have Colson Patisserie in Park Slope on 9th and 6th. And we have OTB Bar in Williamsburg on Broadway and Bedford.
Awesome. That's very exciting. And just so very close to our house.
Yeah, you guys are right there.
We just joined Meat Club, I think.
I think that's what just happened. Yeah. I'm sending an email already. Yeah. I got my card reader here. Take this.
Well, thank you so much for being with us. I think fermenting meat is something, you know, we come from the brewing. We've had all kinds of people on the show talking about fermentation. But after having you on, you know, I feel like I have a much better understand. I mean, I think it's delicious, but I have a much better understanding and appreciation for what you're doing. And also, I think I could actually cure some of my meat at home now.
Do you have some of your favorite resources?
Maybe just one, you know?
Yeah, no, totally.
But these are absolutely incredible. So.
I mean, if I can do it. You know,
John Ralph,
I think
do it.
I saved some of my fridges. I'll just bring a fridge over.
Do you have any recommended resources for people who want to start?
Oh, I mean, there's a decent amount of books out there right now. I think one of the best ones that I started referencing, I'm still young, but when I was younger, was Paul Bertoli's Cooking by Hand. Mm-hmm. That was really a good reference point. It wasn't just an in-your-face recipe. It was you got to figure out how to build your own recipe,
right.
And you got to learn how to do math. And you have to be able to read the product in the situation. And it's just like cooking in that regard. You really have to, you got to get all your senses involved. Mm-hmm. And I really appreciated that book for that, because it wasn't just like, hey, this is my recipe and it's going to work for you. Because that never works.
Right.
There's always variables that you can't control that are different. As simple as water, you know, the salt you're using.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
And those are things that I'd rather go into a situation like that expecting it to be like a possible failure and not just like, oh yeah, this is, I'm going to succeed. Right.
Right.
So that's why I like that book a lot. Cause it set you up for failure, but in the best way.
Awesome.
I love it. John, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you guys for having me.
Thank you.
Yeah. And you can follow Ends Meat at Ends Meat NYC _ on Twitter. And
Instagram.
At Instagram.
And Facebook is Ends Meat.
Awesome. And check him out in Industry City.
Yes, please. Come see us.
Thanks to our co-producer, Rachel Jacobs, who's drunk again because of all the ways we said at the beginning of the show. And thanks to Liz Smith for engineering awesome And to our sponsor of today's show. Thanks, sponsor. I think it's Union Beer. Is it Union Beer today? No, it's not. Not at all. Well, thanks to sponsors.
We'll be back next week with Cider Week.
Liz is about to say it.
Today's show was, in fact, sponsored by Cider Week.
Yeah, Cider Week. Today's Cider Week. Yes, can't wait for Cider Week. Go to Cider Week next week. We'll see you there. Hey!
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.